Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
You know, yesterday I went over this story that we're going to cover with Franny Block in the 3 o'clock hour just a little bit. It's just a crazy story. We're going to share it with you here in just a couple minutes. Franny wrote about it last week. She's got another piece about DEI and a real interesting situation. We'll get into that as well. But this case from Evanston, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago, it's where Northwestern University is, this poor kid who is 11 years old, simply trying to help a classmate, then gets accused of being a racist, and he's charged with a hate crime. I mean, the details here are horrifying. And I would say the thing that really stands out to me is it could happen to any of us. If you have kids, it could happen to anyone. This could happen in Kirkwood, in Woke Webster, because that's the kind of stuff that's happening. And it's frustrating when you hear all the details of how far this actually got. This family had to move out of Evanston because they were being harassed so much. So that's coming up. At the bottom of the hour, Naomi Schaefer Riley, who is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, she's also written a great book, by the way. It's called No Way to Treat a Child. But she wrote a piece in the City Journal about how some of the stuff is playing out at Columbia University, Harvard, etc. All these elite universities where Trump's administration is cracking down. And Naomi's particular, you know, I guess, viewpoint on that is it's their own fault. They've gotten themselves into this. Look, the interim president from Columbia even stepped down over the weekend. We've had a great show so far. If you want to go back and use the rewind function, Sean Spicer was on in the 3 o'clock hour, did a great breakdown of some of the signal stuff and some other things happening with the administration. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about some of the things that happened in Wisconsin. We'll get an update on that Supreme Court race today. And if you remember going back to about 24 hours ago, my friend Jessica McBride, who's a reporter up in Milwaukee, kind of broke this race down. Most of the polling has shown Susan Crawford, who is the liberal, and technically it's a nonpartisan race, but we all know that she's the liberal, and the former AG is the Republican, Brad Schimmel. Jessica's take yesterday was, and I think that most conventional wisdom would be that, you know, Schimmel's going to lose that because Wisconsin tends to go a little bit more lefty, especially in a race like this. However, the polling that came out yesterday from Trafalgar showed it to be a dead heat. Elon's been up there trying to get the voters out. They've spent a bunch of money at a Get Out the Vote campaign. So that's certainly something. Sean Pressler, who was very, very important, played a key role in Pennsylvania, has been up in Pressler's his last name. Now I'm second guessing his name is Sean, but Pressler, the guy, the young guy, by the way, who really did an amazing job of registering these Republicans in Pennsylvania. Scott, it is Scott Pressler. I think I said the wrong name. He's been up in Wisconsin as well. So there is a chance that Brad Schimmel wins that race, but we'll cover it tomorrow here on the show. I have Clint Black tickets to give away. He's playing the Family Arena on Saturday, April 12th. We have tickets all this week and a pair of tickets up for grabs in just a little bit here on 97.1 FM Talk. All right, let's get to Franny Block. She's a reporter for the Free Press. I've mentioned many, many times I'm a big fan of what they're doing at the Free Press, Barry Weiss and her group. And Franny's done some exceptional reporting. She's been on the show before, but she wrote this story last week about the situation situation in Evanston, Illinois that turned into a hate crime that really isn't a hate crime. We'll explain all of that and more this afternoon. Franny, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
I was really mind blown by this story from Evanston, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. We'll get to that here in a second. But as I indicate, you're kind of on fire this week at the Free Press. You have a really interesting DEI case that I think was on the Free Press yesterday. Let's at least spend a little time on that and explain what happened in that situation.
Absolutely. So, yes, I published a story this week about a mom in Pennsylvania who sued her school district because she sent a Freedom of Information Act request to her school district for their DEI curriculum. And the school district came back to her and said, we can't share this with you because the DEI curriculum in this district is a trade secret. And she said to me, trade secret? How can this be a trade secret? This is being taught in a public school, a taxpayer-funded public school. So with the help of a legal nonprofit, she sued the school district. And she actually won a big ruling in Pennsylvania last month, just a couple weeks ago, where the court basically said, no, this can't be a trade secret. This was taught to teachers, taught to administrators, taught to students in the school district. Therefore, it needs to be public record.
So in that particular case, what was the was there any kind of big reveal in the records that were found?
So unfortunately, the craziest part about this case is that, first of all, it took 2 years to get to this point where we've now got a decision like this. But on top of that, this mom in Pennsylvania still does not have access to these records. And the reason for that is basically the case has now been sent back down to a lower court, where a lower court now has to decide, okay, this isn't trade secret, this DEI curriculum, but is it confidential? And so that's actually still being litigated in court now. I think it's just another example of a trend that we've been seeing growing over the past few years, especially since COVID, which is parents taking to the legal system to try to kind of fight for transparency, get more information out of their public schools, but also hitting a lot of brick walls and being told, no, this information that you think should be public, actually, maybe the school district doesn't have to share that with you.
I love the fact, and I know you highlight this, that this is somehow called trade secrets. Like, even the mom says, what the hell is that? What does that mean?
Exactly. And I've covered a bunch of cases like this, actually, of parents suing their school districts. And one for the Free Press, like, a mom was given a $30 million bill when she actually FOIA'd for, I think, also DEI curriculum her school district. That was in Michigan. And what's interesting about these stories is that, you know, these are moms that are, like, at the start, not hyper-political. They're kind of just curious and they want to know what's going on in their kids' school. They're hearing things they want to find out. And then all of a sudden they hit these walls where the school district is telling them these are secrets. What's being taught to your kids? What's being taught to teachers about how to teach your kids? All of this is proprietary. It's secret. It's stuff that goes on. Yes, your tax dollars are funding the school, but we don't actually need to tell you what's going on within the school walls. And I've met a lot of parents that are so frustrated by this.
We have had situations like that in some local school districts that I've highlighted, and it's extremely frustrating. All right, Franny Brock is here from the Free Press. Let's segue into Evanston, Illinois. I grew up for the first 14 years of my life, not too far from that, in Morton Grove in Niles, Illinois. So I know that area pretty well. But the thing that really I shared with the audience yesterday, sort of in synopsis form, Franny, this story, because I was just shocked by this one. But this can happen to any of us, to any of us in this climate. So this is a lot of details here. I know this is a really, really involved story, but kind of explain what happened here. And you finally had these parents who have not gone public from this situation talk to you for this particular story.
Yes. So this, at its core, is a story about how a family's life was completely upended because their 11-year-old son was accused of perpetrating or being a part of a hate crime. And the truth was actually far from that. But that truth didn't matter in this community of Evanston. Many of the people in the community ostracized this family and essentially pushed them out of town because they just believed that this 11-year-old child could have been involved in a hate crime. And unfortunately, the sad reality of this story is that there were three nooses found on a bush outside of a middle school in Evanston, a public middle school. And these nooses, this is what was assumed to be a hate crime, that they was racially motivated, that they were hung. That's what the superintendent had emailed out to everybody in the school district almost immediately after they were discovered, calling them a hate crime. And the reality, unfortunately, is that one of the children involved in this incident unfortunately was struggling with his mental health, and these nooses were not racially motivated at all. Police actually investigated it and concluded that, in fact, they were a cry for help. That's a direct quote from the police report. So it's truly an extremely tragic story of essentially when people's kind of biases, when they want to believe a story so badly to be true, what are the facts that they're willing to ignore?
So you have a sixth grader who is the friend of the man that you talked to, Mr. Klotz, who pulls three jump ropes out of a recess bin and he starts to tie them in knots. And they eventually look like nooses, or they are nooses. The kids see that he's upset. And then Klotz's son asks him, you know, what's going on? Kind of concerned, checks on him, right? But there's so much going on inside the school and things related to race that the people in charge automatically say hate crime, emails go out, the parents are alerted, all this stuff happens very quickly, right?
Exactly. And I think, as you kind of alluded to, this school district was at the time run by a superintendent who kind of made it a big part of his brand to promote anti-racism education in the United States. And there's actually a profile of him, kind of a very glossy profile of him, in the Wall Street Journal during COVID, that where he talks about that. And one of the very controversial things he said very early on in his tenure in Evanston was he was talking about prioritizing which students would come back into the classroom based on their race in Evanston. And that's kind of what started this then profile in the Wall Street Journal. What did he mean by that? What does anti-racism education look like in public schools? All this kind of stuff. And he later clarified, saying, no, I didn't mean it was by race necessarily. I guess that is, in fact, illegal. But that's kind of the groundwork of what's going on in Evanston, what's going on in the school district, as then a parent discovers these nooses. And it does kind of explain the school district's reaction of why immediately the school district goes, this must be a hate crime, when, again, the facts of the case are unfortunately much different.
And, you know, this is a shocking case, just given the facts of what you describe in the story. But then when you get to the reaction of some of the other parents and the continued treatment of this family, even when they should know what the facts really are, that makes this, I think, even more horrifying.
Absolutely. And I think as detailed in this police report that I uncovered as a part of my reporting, there were many different moments in which the school district was likely alerted of the mental health issues of one of these students that was involved. And unfortunately, they continued to push a narrative that this was a hate crime.
This family moved out of town, right?
They did, yes. So in the summer after this incident happened, this happened in May, their son was placed on administrative leave from school, essentially kind of a suspension from school. He missed the rest of his sixth grade, and that summer, the Klotz family moved out of Evanston. They placed their dream home up for sale, moved to a nearby suburb just to get their son into a different school district.
You know, I mentioned this yesterday. We've had a couple of different cases, even one from around here that goes back about 6 months in a local school district where there was a football practice, and then, you know, African-American dude walks into a restroom, and there's a noose, and then automatically they jump to conclusions. Our local TV station does a story. The newspaper, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, does a story. It becomes very, very clear early, very early in all this. In fact, even before they run the story, because they tag the story with the accurate information that the noose had nothing to do with racism. It was because someone was in mental crisis like this, suicidal, right? So, you know, it is understandable why someone who's African-American could have that reaction. But then you get to the irresponsibility of the media, because they blast that out like it's facts. Everybody's, oh, there's a noose found at the restroom in, you know, in St. Charles and Francis Howell. And then when the facts come out, and this is, Brandy, this is what was the most frustrating. I watched anchors and reporters on our local NBC affiliate do this story. And in the tag of the story, they say, well, district officials have indicated that this had nothing to do with racism. So they do the whole story blaming racism, but then they have to tag it saying, oh, no, it wasn't, but we kind of faked you out anyway. That's really frustrating.
I think, you know, a big lesson of so many of these stories, and unfortunately there are many stories like this across the country, as you just highlighted, an unfortunate lesson is that once a narrative is out there, once a narrative is set of what happened, it doesn't matter what the truth is. A lot of times it's really hard to correct the narrative. And that's something that...
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Klotz, kind of the main person in my story about Evanston, that's what he talked about a lot. That was what was so frustrating to him, is he felt like even if he had gone to a school board meeting and screamed from the rooftops in Evanston that this isn't the real story, this isn't the real story, he doesn't feel like anybody would listen to
him. Yeah, well, and, you know, to illustrate that even further, this is what's shocking, I think, even more so. We know the name Kim Fox here in St. Louis. So even after the cops determine no hate crime, Kim Fox tries to punish this 12-year-old, charging him with disorderly conduct.
Yes. And Kim Fox, same prosecutor that, prosecuted Jussie Smollett,
right,
and then, you know, dismissed the charges, brought them back, that whole mess. Yes. So this child was, police did bring a charge of disorderly conduct. Their reasoning, I asked the police department about this, they said, well, people were disturbed by the nooses. And that was kind of the reasoning behind bringing that charge. Ultimately, the police department was able to tell me it obviously went into juvenile court because this is a 12-year-old child. And it was dealt with in a non-criminal matter, is what the police department told me.
Wow. This is great reporting, Franny Block. I'm loving the work at the Free Press overall, but this one really, it's just every time I read another paragraph, I shook my head even more. And I think a lot of the listeners will do the same. I put it up on the X, formerly Twitter, yesterday. I'll do that again this afternoon. Thank you, Franny Block. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
She's doing great work over there at the Free Press. I would argue, because I'm a fan of the Free Press, that everyone over there is doing great work. They don't have, you know, one thing that I've noticed, Sue, is they don't have as much like daily content every single day like the major publications do, because they don't have the staff. So
right,
you'll see a piece like her DEI piece that we talked about earlier in the interview that came out, I think, yesterday, and it's still up there, you know, at the top of the website. So it is a great resource. You're going to see different type of reporting. By the way, it's not all, you know, they're certainly far from pro-Trump. There's some, you know, questions that are raised about some of the things that the administration does, but they're done in a far more fair way than the Washington Post or the New York Times. Now, on the news topic, what happened to that kid and that family in Chicago is just frightening. And again, that can happen to anyone, because these things take on a life of their own. And one of the things that I mentioned to Franny, and I just Googled this because I was curious, this goes back to June of 2020. That was George Floyd month, right? So there were, and this goes to the issue of how, you know, reliable is the Associated Press. So when I Google noose in Oakland, California, because I remember there was a story there that I, you know, referred to earlier, they have all kinds of stories up here about how nooses were found in this park and it was a hate crime and all this stuff. They don't have any of the corrections, right? So here's the story. Police in Oakland opened an investigation after a caller reported finding an effigy hanging from a city tree after the mayor said that nooses were found dangling from trees. Well, it was all a bunch of crap, and the nooses were actually up there. The whole thing, they claimed there was a fake body, never happened. The nooses were up there because an older African-American gentleman put them up there. They had been there for years.
Right.
They had been there for years. He was using them for exercise. But It didn't matter to the Associated Press. It didn't matter to many of these news organizations. And I can prove it to you right now, because if you go out there and you do a search, you're still going to see these stories out there. Here's one that says, origin unclear. Oh, no, no, no. The origin was very clear. And even then, when presented with the facts of that case, the mayor, and this is hard to even find because they don't put the corrections up there. The mayor said, I don't care. It doesn't matter. That's essentially what they did in Evanston at this school. They didn't care what the truth was. They just cared that that was a representative symbol of hate, and they were going to deem it a hate crime and racist no matter what the facts are. This is what the American media does on a regular basis, which, by the way, is why if a noose is found or any kind of racist graffiti, 99% of the time, it's actually a black dude that does it or a black woman. Unfortunately, it is what happens. I don't know how to explain it. It's what happens on a regular basis.
Get more at 971talk.com.